Hello, Internet. This is Ewan Spence and ESE Insight calling. Welcome to another episode of Jukebox Jury as we review the song submitted for the Eurovision Song Contest 2020. This is another episode that we recorded before the show in Rotterdam was cancelled. But we have reviewed the songs. We have decided whether they're hits or misses or maybes. We've done all our debates and we'd love to have you join in the debate as well in the comments back at our website, eseinsight.com. So, without further ado, over to the court. Let's see what our judges have got.
Hello, Internet.
I'm Ewan Spence.
I'm Kanya McLeod.
I'm Scott Reed.
And this is
Jukebox
Jury. In front of our judges today, we have Germany, Ukraine, Slovenia, Austria, Armenia, and Belgium. Yes, good afternoon, good morning, good evening. Welcome to the show where we have to do six instead of five because 41's an awkward number. Thanks, EBU. Yes, it's Jukebox Jury. Another chance for us to listen to the songs going to this year's Eurovision Song Contest. Talk to them with a number of judges, bring our opinions, discuss and rate them hit, miss or maybe. Joining me back again on the bench, we have Scott Reid. How are you doing, Scott?
Hello, not too bad.
So, sitting there online, Eurovision is there. Eurovision memories. What strike, you know, when you think about back to your youth and Eurovision, what comes to mind?
Weirdly, when you started saying that, and I realise I've talked about this before, but the first Eurovision I remember was 1991 with Italy, and you're not going to forget that one.
You are not. No. Kids, ask your parents.
It was absolute chaos. And I don't know what happened there, but that may have been where, I don't know. I'm sure I saw Eurovision before that. That's the one that lodges in my head, and it's not a massive surprise why.
And I love the fact that everybody now just goes, Italy was a terrible show, it overran, it went on forever. You know, compared to the last five Eurovisions, that Italian show was shorter than the last handful of Eurovisions.
Yeah, and to be honest, I mean, depending on how you define quality here, it was a good thing to watch. Whether it was like particularly high quality is a different issue.
There are slightly more songs nowadays, so there are slight mitigating factors in there, but there we go. Kanya also joins us as well. And if memory serves, first time we've had a Eurovision singer as a juror.
Okay, I feel very privileged then. I'm very excited to be here and very excited that somebody could actually introduce me in that way.
Yes, singing for BBC Alapa at Choir of the... It's not Choir of the Year, it's Eurovision Choir, isn't it?
That's right. Eurovision Choir was an amazing experience. I think I cried maybe 342 times just on the day itself. But genuinely, as a Eurovision fan, to go through the experience of dress rehearsals and the day of Eurovision, simply one of the best days of my life.
So, first time on the show, the first time on the podcast. You've done Castaways with Ellie before,
I did.
We will link to that in the show notes. But traditional question, first Eurovision memory.
Well, my first Eurovision was in 1981. So seeing Bucks Fizz win and being United Kingdom, you know, you thought, well, this is easy. We can do this so many times. And remarkably, my first time being at Eurovision was in 1997. And again, seeing United Kingdom win and thinking, again, this is so easy. But sadly, it's not. We've learned since then. But I have great memories on the sofa. I have great memories at the contests. It's just a very special thing for me, the Eurovision Song Contest.
And I think it's special for everybody here around the table at Insight and, of course, everyone who's listening and the Eurovision community as a whole. It's why we gather here and do this year after year after year after show after show after week after week. So we have six of our next entries into We Will Always Remember These Songs. It's going to end up this show with Belgium, before then Armenia, Austria, Slovenia and Ukraine. But we're going to start off with one of the big five. It is from Germany and it's Violent Thing.
Oh,
Dulick there singing Violent Thing, an internal selection this year from Germany, although they did have two juries, which was a jury of 20 experts and then a panel jury of 100 TV watchers. So we don't know what else popped up there. So we do have this song here from Ben Dulick featuring Be OK. And it's a curious one, it has to be said. It's another Symphonics one. And that I find curious because Symphonics, you know, tend to have two or three songs each year in the contest. And I always get the feeling that they always favour one over the other. And I'm thinking, you know, if you've got Bulgaria and you've got Germany, which one do you back?
Yeah, Bulgaria, like, are probably a safer bet than Germany in recent times. I think there's also a problem with a lot of people going for Symphonics because you're going to get a lot of songs that are going to be down the middle lane. And if you're in the middle lane in Eurovision, you're crashing into cars on both sides. The problem I have with this one mainly is the title, which I can't get past. I don't know if something's been lost in, not translation, because it's in English, but Violent Thing is a very strange concept to put front and centre in what is supposed to be, I'm trying to pull, for want of a better phrase, sort of song. So it's
yeah, and to have that as the sort of main melodic hook. It's
yeah,
like, we want you to keep singing the lyrics to this song again, and the lyrics are the title of the song. It just puts me off balance as well.
I do like the song, and your question about Symphonics, I feel pretty comfortable there with them entering a number of songs, because when you look at the variety of songs that they've entered this year, you wouldn't fit them into the same genre, even, never mind thinking that they're from the same songwriting box.
And as our producers pointed out, they're doing Malta as well.
Absolutely.
And it's a completely different song.
You're totally right. Mm. Yeah. So I like the song. It's growing on me more and more. Actually, the opening is probably my favorite. There's this kind of high heel click beat at the start. So when I'm walking down the street here in the opening, I can feel my stomp enhancing as the song begins. But I do, as maybe you said as well, Scott, there's one thing that is worrying me. Is it does for me, well, should it, does it fit into the Benjamin Ingrosso box? I suppose that's our first question. But he had the look, he had the danceability. In the video, Ben does not dance at all. He shuffles, he turns round. And my question is, are we having somebody who is singing a song that needs to have an amazing danceability in the way that Chameleon and Michaela did for Malta last year, where really she wasn't a dancer? And does that fail the song as a result? So I really hope he can dance, because the song really needs it. But I think it's a good song. And I think for me, probably the biggest question that we've been asking the United Kingdom is, what were they going to do this year to combat such a difficult year last year? Well, Germany had to answer the same question, I think. And I think they've maybe had a better answer.
I think one of the interesting things about Germany addressing the question is Thomas Schreiber saying that we looked at the audience demographics for our national final selection, and it skewed older, but our demographic for watching Eurovision skewed younger. So we were never going to choose a song from our national final system that was going to click with a song at Eurovision, which is why they changed the system. And it's an interesting approach, because it says we're in Eurovision to win, as opposed to promote the country or enjoy taking part. And yeah, you know, melodically there is a good song here. You know, I like the sort of roller coaster it has. There's beats moving faster and slower, and I like having that variation in the song. But Scott, I'm a bit like you. When that lyric kicks in, and you know, my brain just goes, "Oh, hold on a minute!" Mm. I'm saying that out loud. And you look at the video, and no,
I don't think it's intended as such, but it. The connotations are unintended connotations.
Somebody should have taken a step back, looked at the video and went, yeah, hold on a minute, guys. Mm. So for me, it is a maybe, because that may pass over everything in staging, may minimize that or turn that phrasing around on its head and something like that. I mean, we've got that song, and I can't remember the group's name, Violently. Was it Human Cry from decades and decades ago? There you go. There's your obscure old reference. But you can have, you know, you can use that word in different contexts, and maybe the staging will do that. So it's a long shot, but for right now, for me, it sits as a maybe.
For me, this one is a miss, but I would not be surprised if Germany are starting to turn the oil tanker round in their approach to Eurovision in the future.
For me, it's a hit. And the reason why is I feel that German, as I said, needed to do a lot. They needed to change and they needed to look at themselves. And they did that by talking about the demographics of audience. That's fantastic that a broadcaster is thinking in that way. So I feel happy that people are considering demographics as part of their song choice. So I'm going to give it a hit. But I think there's one question that we just haven't answered yet with this song. Is there anything that you wouldn't tell your mama about Eurovision?
Answers on a postcard. Or in the modern sense, give us a comment at esinsight.com. Right then, so we have Germany with a hit, a miss, and a maybe. The complete We Have No Idea at Jukebox Jury. So we will step on to our next song. It is Goa from Ukraine with Solevi. So Levy there from Goa singing for Ukraine. It's very traditional sounding. You can't mistake this for just another pop number off the shelf.
Sure, you're totally right. And I have to say, the first 20 seconds, I love it. And I mean properly love it. Give me flutes. And, you know, it's kind of given me that kind of Emily DeForest opening whistles kind of thing. But really, 20 seconds... It's peaked on the 20th second. And from there, I just think it plateaus very, very dramatically. But I can play the first 20 seconds on repeat.
It feels like a club song. It's got that 20 seconds of the intro for blending with the other song. And then it gets to the point it wants to be at in intensity and beat and drive and stays there. And there's no variation. It's just utterly predictable. You know where it's going. You can get out on at the dance floor. And you're fine with it. But I don't like that in my Eurovision songs. And long-time listeners will know that. I like my songs with a narrative. I like a peak and a flow and a rise and a fall. And Ukraine doesn't have any of that. The flutes are lovely. The instrumentation is lovely. And to a certain extent, the Ukrainian in it is lovely as well. But it all adds together to something that I quite definitely don't like in my contest.
It's not subtle, is it?
My contest. My possessive is bad.
I mean, if there was a 20-second Eurovision Song Contest, it'd probably win, I think.
No. The red car and the blue car out of it from Milky Way. That would... Dated references. I'll stop.
Ukraine seem to be in a strange place right now. We'll just put it that way. There is an element of me which appreciates the fact that they've just gone, we are Ukraine and this is what we do. There are other things going on in the mix. I, however, cannot see how this appeals to most of the world, to be honest. So, I mean, if it comes on my Spotify, I actually quite enjoy it. But as I sit down and watch it, it doesn't really work for me.
It's a complete contrast to Germany. Ukraine have went, we're going to put in a song that says Ukraine, and we don't really care what will happen, even though they've got a 100% qualification record. It's just like... The song is for us. Whereas Germany went, we want to do really well. We want to try and find a win. We're going to do a song that's competitive, that isn't necessarily saying we are Germany.
I'm trying to put myself into then the year of Jamala. And maybe we could have said exactly the same thing. That was in quite an introverted song. The performance relatively introverted as well. And using languages that we... would not have normally heard before, but then won.
I would kind of hold that Jamala's had an element of accessibility, and like even if there is an element of, it's not directly Massive Attack or anything like that, but there is an element where if you were aware of that kind of music, you could plug into it. And the only bit of Jamala for me that was going to struggle was the wailing element, the emotional element, but they actually played that as a virtue. So in that regard, I think, I know exactly what you mean, though. Like, it was more challenging for the average audience, but it also had a call to action and it was more accessible.
You're totally right. Definitely more accessible. And I think, going back to the point about this very quick plateau, and from the limited experience I have of this style of music, and maybe I look back at when I tried to be cool as a teenager listening to the Trio Bulgarka, the mysterious voices of the Trio Bulgarka, which is very much the style of music, that it very much does to stick with this constant throughout the song. And to me, I looked and said, you know, how would I improve the song? What would you do if you had this song, but you were the producer wanting to do more with it, apart from more flutes, because I love flutes. Even just speeding up the BPM, maybe something just to give it some energy at a certain point of the song.
Because it's not even right. I'm trying to do a stomp and a good head roll to that beat, and it's just too slow.
Exactly.
Are we going to end up with a situation where someone does a really speeded up version, an 8-core version of this, and it suddenly does very well?
A 9-core version gets you the views, it gets you noticed, and if that's what you want to win Eurovision, then there we go. Let's not mention just how big Jordan Clark's freak was last year for the UK in 9-core. Let's stay with this year. Ukraine, hit, miss, or maybe?
It is a miss for me. I think we have to kind of mention Poland from last year as well while we're here. Just, it's unfair to just benchmark them all in that pot, but it does give me this feeling, and didn't do so well. And I really fear for Ukraine that this could be the year that they struggle to get through.
I think Ukraine have just gone, this is us, and we don't really care what anyone else thinks, to be honest. If they haven't, then they're in for a shock. It's a miss.
Yeah, and I would say it's a miss for me as well. It's just not accessible enough to bring in the number of votes that it would need to get it up. And, you know, potentially, we already saying, it might not even get out the semi-final.
No, I actually don't think it will.
Right, so we will move on ahead now to our next song. And it is from our host from a few years back. It's Portugal, as Lisa brings us Medo de Sente. Better to send tear there, the fear of feeling from Elisa singing for Portugal this year, winning her semi-final and, of course, the grand final festival at Cannes. So, it's really slow and dreamy. And what I like about this is, much like Ukraine, we've got a country here that is really confident in the songs that they're sending to the song contest. And I think a lot of that you have to put down to Salvador. But you look back at the recent list, I mean, Telemovis was and Ojardam were both really confident Portuguese songs, and they were quite happy to send this out. And, you know, they like their ballads, and they've sent us another ballads. And it reminds me a lot of this, actually, kind of the songs that were coming out of Portugal in the late 60s, early 70s, that were just, oh, we have a different musical heritage, so this is what we do.
I think maybe take this as a positive that Portugal do have an aesthetic. You know this is Portugal. And I quite like that when a country, when you know, like we talked about Germany, you do not know that's Germany. Okay, Netherlands, over the past few years, you started to get a feeling of what the Dutch entry could be like.
And they've also played this, we kind of do Americana.
Correct.
Over the last couple of years. You hear an Americana song at Eurovision and your brain doesn't go Nashville, it goes the Netherlands.
Netherlands. And so I quite like a country aesthetic, and Portugal definitely have that in this case. Does that mean I like it or not? That's a different question. But certainly, I think only Portugal could have put this entry in.
And I know what you mean about that sort of only Portugal could do it, because much as it reminds me of the songs in the 60s and 70s from Portugal, I look at the results that Portugal got in the 60s and 70s and think, well, that's probably going to carry through as well.
Yeah, Portugal are always a national final that I never quite feel cool enough to watch. They do what they do, and they are the cool kids. And part of me is quite happy that, almost like Ukraine, they do have this sense of, like, this is us, but it is in a slightly more accessible way, slightly. But in terms of it cutting through, it did feel like just sitting at a piano bar with something playing in the background rather than something that would actually grab your attention or give you a call to action to vote for it.
And that's the thing. You can have great songs, but you don't necessarily have a great competitive song.
Yeah, I think they're not being particularly competitive in this situation. And if I was in a bar in Faro and this came on, fine. It would pass you by and you'd still eat whatever you were eating and you wouldn't worry about it. But as a competitive song in Eurovision, I'm struggling. And watching the live performance, as we just did, to make these comments, the backing singers and the lead singer are moving between unison and harmony, but unfortunately not doing it particularly well. It's as if they were supposed to fully do this in unison, and then some have tried to create a harmony during the song or during the second verse, and it's coming across very unplanned at the moment. So I know there's a few weeks to go, and I think they need a bit of work in it.
It's not a competitive song that's needed for the Eurovision Song Contest, so that puts it down pretty much as a solid miss from me. Scott?
I would also say miss. I think Portugal have got a level of like sheer confidence and just, you're going to get what you get from us, and you may be some way down the line until they go, wait, we've not qualified in how long? Before they actually
send some swing jazz again.
So yeah, miss.
And a miss from me.
So there we go. Right, the advantage of having six songs in this episode is slightly longer runtime, but it also means that we have a proper half time. Three songs before, three songs after, so we have a cake to bake. Or in the case of being very sensible, we have individually wrapped Tunnocks caramel wafers.
Wow,
still don't have any sponsorship from Tunnocks. But again, we don't have sponsorship from Kinney either. So there we go. So everybody, dig into the Tunnocks. And for those of you playing along at home, you can head along to a newsagent's, hopefully, if you're in the UK. And if not, you'll be able to order them from Amazon. And while we're all enjoying those, we will have a listen to Austria, Vincent Bueno, and Alive.
You make me feel alive.
You make me feel like I'm alive again. Alive again. Only you can make me feel alive.
Vincent Bueno there and Alive. Got a thought?
So after listening to Germany, which I think is a very contemporary tune, and I see a lot of what is coming about from, as I said, in Grosso and Timberlake, this actually gives me something very different. I think I'm thinking of, there was a time in the late 90s when Stevie Wonder wasn't kind of that cool for a little while, kind of around his part-time lover, you know, era. And I could absolutely imagine on that late 80s Stevie Wonder album, this song being on it. Da, 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 da. It's got something about it. It's very Stevie Wonder. And so it, for me, it fits in a very different genre to the other, what would be related to Timberlake or Ingrosso songs. So that's where it fits for me. And it just feels a little dated as a result.
It's weird because I've been sitting here and I've been thinking, that feels quite fresh to my old ears. I'm thinking, am I, you know, is my only touchstone to this Bruno Mars? Is there a bit of that in there? But no, it's Stevie Wonder. Thanks.
It's also Justin Timberlake. It's also Can't Stop the Feeling. It's,
never heard of it.
No. Austria continue their run of dependable Radio 2 playlist smash songs. I don't mind this. The performer has a bit to him. He can clearly dance. I could see this sneaking through on the premise that enough juries would be happy with it, and enough of the public would carry it over as well. So I think this could do well. There's a difference between, we often say about Radio 2 songs for Eurovision, this is not ideal because it's dated. But the problem really is songs that played on Radio 2, you don't notice. I think you would notice this one if this was on.
I don't like this song at all. There's something that kind of annoys me with this song. And it's all very wholesome and lovely. And you're totally right, Scott. It's completely Radio 2. But it must be in the late 30s for me. And I'm trying to figure out why I've got quite a reaction to this song. But yeah, it could sneak through. But it's one of the songs that I've already started fast-forwarding. Can you fast-forward these days? That's a very tape recorder thing to do. But you know what I mean. Yeah.
Skip 30 seconds. You know, six times, and there you go. You're through the song. What I find interesting is it doesn't have a short hook that you'd normally get in a pop song. It's got quite a long lyrical hook. You know, you make me feel alive again. And I'm sitting there going, that's a really long hook. But when you consider that in the context of the 25-second recap you have at Eurovision and then the 15-second recap, you get the big lyrical hook in once or twice. There's a certain precision to this song where I think they've looked at Eurovision and what does and doesn't work. They haven't necessarily written the song for Eurovision, but when they're able to make artistic choices, they've went, how do we make it competitive? Now, does that dull it down very slightly in terms of chart success and accessibility? I think it does. But does it make it better at the Eurovision Song Contest? I think it does.
That's a very good point. And yeah, the other thing I would say is that whatever it's doing to all of us, it's getting a reaction.
And that's better than nice.
Yeah, exactly that. So, yeah, I think it's got potential.
For me, it's a maybe. For all the positives and negatives we've got here, you're going to remember it. It's going to be there. I think it's going to be stronger than just a middling jury vote. I think it's going to be a very strong jury vote, to be perfectly true. I don't know whether it'll reach enough in the public, but I think... Normally, I would say that this is a song that's likely to qualify, but it is from Austria. Okay, so Roman, it's not going to qualify. There we go. Now that's dealt with. It's a maybe for me.
I actually think top 10 and hit.
It's a miss from me, unsurprisingly, after my comments. And I think thinking it's in semi-final 2. And again, I don't always feel that if there's another song in this broad genre that... two songs can't qualify, but we do have Benny Cristo in this section of the semi-final as well, and that to me comes across much more contemporary, and I wonder would this lose out, but it's a miss for me.
So there we go then. Austria managing a hit, a miss, and a maybe. So we have strong opinions and not sures all around on that one. As always, you can leave your comments back on our website on what you think of the songs in this and all of the episodes of Jukebox Jury, ESEinsight.com, and of course on our social medias at Facebook and Twitter @ESEinsight for both of those as well. Right then, two to go. We will finish up with Belgium, but before we get there, we have Armenia. It's Athena Manoukian and Chains on You. I'm yours, only yours, and of course, happy. Chains on, chains on you. I'ma put them boy chains on, chains on you. Chains on, chains on you. I'ma put them boy chains on, chains on you. I was staring at you while I was sitting next to you. I think you got it. You just started thinking how many moves under you. So you were walking towards me, and I knew I should believe I would be the one that really make you feel like a boss. I started, I make it. Write it, I work it, don't like it, I'm gonna say no. I ain't online, I'm trying, I'm flying, no bite, and I know I'm gonna make it to the top. Chains on You there from Armenia's Athena Manoukian. It certainly holds your attention, Scott.
Yeah, it's not subtle. We just had the Radio 2 song. This is the Radio 1 / Capital 1, to the point where at that sudden ending, you're just waiting for it to go Capital at the end. It seems current. It seems a decent song to me if that is your kind of genre. It's got definite sort of Ariana Grande, sort of it's modern. It is definitely modern. I initially looked at that video and thought, well, that should be doing quite well. And then I looked at the betting odds and went, oh, hang on, what's happened? So then I went off to watch the live performance, and staging is going to be critical, I think it's fair to say, because there is a danger that if it's not where it should be, she may come across as a bit of a wannabe.
And we do have the staging ready to go. There is a massive diamond structure, and you know, you can wheel that onto the stage. You're going to have the same thematic links from the staging and the video, assuming they go for the diamond, and the song is all about diamonds, so let's assume there is going to be a diamond there. And yeah, I find it interesting because this musical style is definitely not in my wheelhouse, yet I can watch it for 3 minutes, I can listen to it for 3 minutes, it holds my attention, and I've got to think that's a really good bit of songwriting to be able to do that.
You're right. It certainly holds your attention, as the performance does as well. But I think Scott made a very good point. We're watching the newly updated version, and you're watching this slick video. The dance is amazing. And you're thinking the same. You're thinking, wow, this is going to do great. But there's often a reason a lot of artists lip sync their songs. There's some very challenging songs to sing, and I've got a feeling this is one of them.
That is going to be the issue here in terms of whether this is one of these really highly produced songs that you get on Capital, which can it be replicated live? And that's the challenge.
Okay, and for our listeners outside of the UK, Capital is a mainstream commercial pop music station.
So whatever your pop station is, Radio 1, Z100, etc.
Yeah, that's it. It's Capital. I mean, I think one of the reasons I really like this is it's got those clear sections in the song. There's a delineation. There is the tight rhythm in the song, but the song structure itself has the rhythm. And also, it's so modern, it's got tubular bells in it. And that just, yep, that's fine. That's me. I'm sold. But it does have that distinctive sound as well. So it stands out. I don't like the genre, but, you know, dong, 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 and the underneath and the tone above, this is a good package.
Mm-hmm. Again, we've talked a lot about country aesthetics in this episode, and I think again you're starting to see, like, if you think of maybe two out of the last three songs from Armenia, they've got this feel to them, this kind of contemporary but kind of slightly diverse feel to the song. This plays in that again. It doesn't seem that far away from last year's entry to me. And is that a good thing or not? I don't know. But certainly, we watched the whole video. The performance was fantastic. Just not sure yet if it's strong enough to beat many other artists and female artists this year.
That's true, but it is quite a flat year, so I'm quite happy to give this a hit because it's got that little bit extra for me. We've listened to, obviously, being the fans that we are, we've listened to all the tracks already, so there is something in there for me that's going, yeah, not me, but yeah, contest-wise, hit.
For me, it is the highest possible maybe, because there's still an element of slight doubt as to how it's going to translate on stage versus the really super slick video. It would not surprise me if it does very well, however.
I'm going to put it as a hit as well, but I'm basing that very much on the recorded version. And I still have a little bit of sensitivity about how she'll be able to perform this as well on stage, but certainly as a song we will look back on from the recorded version, it's a hit.
And you'll know yourself, Connor, that no matter how much rehearsal, no much video, no much prep, it does come down to 3 minutes live once around the world, and that's all you get. No retakes, no do-overs, even the best have sometimes slipped up at that.
Yeah, they have. You're absolutely right. And it's relatively low in her range in the beginning, and it's nearly that kind of spoken singing at the beginning as well, and that's the style she's tried to use at the start of the song. And actually, people could watch that those first 10 seconds and be slightly put off by it, because there's a show coming. We know there is a show coming in the performance, but will people wait even that long to see it?
We have one more song to go. Yeah, we get six in this one. That's why it's slightly longer. And we're over to Belgium for our final song in this episode. So before we end up the show, Hooverphonic, Release Me. Release me. Hooverphonic then, Release Me for Belgium. So, the big important question, and listeners, you can play along as well. Which Bond theme does that remind you of?
GoldenEye, but like a lot less oomph.
That's it's like, so like GoldenEye on a 45 but played at 33.
Yeah, basically, yeah, it's at the wrong speed.
A wrong speeded GoldenEye. Choice number one. Choice number two.
Well, remarkably, the song I'm choosing probably is GoldenEye on 33, and it's Sheryl Crow's Tomorrow Never Dies, because it's got that sort of wooziness that you weren't used to in a Bond song at that time. And maybe, again, we're not used to this wooziness in a Eurovision song at this time.
I mean, for me, I want to go back. I mean, I did have Sheryl Crow written down as well. Also because Senek did a wonderful cover of that next year. So I'm just going to lay that seed now for later on in this little chat. But I would go back to Rita Coolidge and All Time High for Octopussy. Just that vocal that carries it, and nice stripped back instrumentation. We're just going to let our strength shine through. And for me, I think that's the biggest thing for Belgium. Hooverphonic. They've not changed their current approach one single beat. Now, this is a band that's been around for decades, have went through various styles. So if they had changed to do a Eurovision song, it would have been understandable. But they haven't. You go back and listen to the back catalogue, the recent albums. This is what they are 100% comfortable with.
And it comes across as authentic in that way as well. But the issue is going to be connection with the audience, because we've looked at this video for 3 minutes and the camera is zipping between here's the drummer, here's the guitarist, here's etc. Whereas I engage when the singer is looking straight down the camera. We're at a pause where we can actually see it right now. When she is actually singing right down the camera, that is the strongest part of the song. And the emotional connection is going to be a big issue with this song.
I'm trying to figure out... If I didn't know Hooverphonic, which to be fair, I didn't at all. And again, maybe most of the audience will be thinking the same thing. They won't have the benefit of back catalogue, etc. What genre actually is this? And maybe, yes, it does build eventually into this kind of like Bondness. But where do we, what box do we put this in? Is it ambient pop? Is it woozy jazz? I mean, what are they trying to achieve with the song?
It's 2 a.m. in the morning and the only bottle left at the party is green.
I've been there. Yeah. Been there. But I'm still not too sure.
Yeah. Put something on.
I still think, even at that point, I'm still putting Charlotte Pirelli on, to be totally honest with you. Maybe until I get
never
to
change, Connor. Never until, change.
Maybe when the blue bottle comes out, then that's when things change.
Oh, yeah, the blue nun coming out now. Yeah. I like this. I don't like this song. I really like this song. And I did go into Hooverphonic's back catalogue. They were one of the first names announced and there was no music. So, you know, October, November, there's not much to do apart from going to the back catalogue. And yeah, it's this light ambient jazz. And they've changed lead singers, but then they reinvented themselves. So it keeps the rest of the band fresh as well. Alex Callier, who's part of the band, he co-wrote Senek's song last year. So he knows the circus. And he came back to the rest of the band and went, we can do this. This works. We're going to be good here. And I love that because not only are Hooverphonic confident, they already know what to expect. So they've got a yardstick and they decided we want to go to the biggest televised event for music on the planet outside of the Super Bowl halftime show. Great, lovely. Let Hooverphonic be Hooverphonic.
Yeah, like I say, my biggest concern here is that I take on board the fact that they seem to know the circus and they seem to know what they're doing. I have concerns with it, the camera zipping about the place when I want to have an emotional connection with this singer who is looking right down the lens. And if it zips around the place, then I'm going to lose that.
Yeah, there is a band there, but I think the rest of the band have to take a step back and go, we've only got 3 minutes to make that connection.
Yeah, in a previous episode when we were talking about Bulgaria, it seemed really obvious to us what the staging was going to be like and how we could focus on the artist. And you nearly need to allow this to happen to Hooverphonic, and it's not going to, because they are a band, they're all as important as each other, and so they're going to have to do that traditional, oh, the guitarist playing, we'll go to the guitarist, oh, there's a soft beat, so we'll go to the drummer. And I think, unfortunately, that is to the detriment of the staging of the song.
It is a great song, but it's not a great competitive song. There isn't that moment of, right, now you need to pick up the phone, now you need to vote. And great, the band probably realised that and they're comfortable with that. They just want to get out on stage. But in terms of, you know, when it comes down to it, we still keep score at this contest. There is still a ranking at the end of it, irrespective of how much you want to have artistic integrity. They're comfortable with that deal. I really, really respect that. It's a maybe for me because I think that confidence will come through, but staging is still a huge question.
Yeah, if we had a situation where she was front and center staring down the lens for the vast majority of the song, I would be seeing her at this point, but we won't. I doubt we will. It's a really tricky one because it could easily completely flounder because it's very subtle, so it's gonna be a maybe.
And for me, unfortunately, it's a miss. I know this is in semi-final one with a lot of very strong, powerful songs in it, particularly in the second half, so I think its cut through is going to be limited, knowing the strength of the songs around it.
So there we are, Belgium with two maybes and a miss there. And that brings us to the end of the scoring portion of this round of Jukebox Jury. So if we have a look back at the table, bottom of the table, keeping themselves company of Portugal and Ukraine. We then move up to Belgium. In there, we have a tie for the next place. We have Austria and Germany, both on a hit, a miss, and a maybe. So we follow the rules of the Eurovision Song Contest. If the countback is equal, whoever's earlier in the running order takes the higher placing. Germany takes silver, Austria takes bronze, but Armenia takes gold with two hits and a maybe. So we come to our traditional question: can Armenia win the Eurovision Song Contest this year?
I struggle to see it. I don't know. And now I think about it, I don't know how much the juries are going to go for it beyond anything else. No, I can't see it winning. I mean, if it's performed at its absolute peak, then not quite Fuego or anything like that, but it could be like a massive pop number. But there's a lot of danger and choppy waters ahead for it.
It's going to be useful when they come to make the running order because there's not a lot of high energy this year. So it's going to be used as a point of punctuation in the running order. But I can't see it winning either.
I know this may be played back to me for the next 20 years, but I'm going to say there's absolutely no chance that this is going to win Eurovision 2020.
I like this. You take the opinion and you commit to it. That's a no from Connor. It's a no from me. And it's, well, it's maybe a no, I'm not quite sure, from Scott.
That would be an amazing opening to, like, if they host the following year, if they just get us. They're not going to win.
Oh, and we would probably get an appearance fee as well. So I'd be quite happy with that. That's it. That is Jukebox Jury for another week. Thank you all very much for listening. Your comments are always welcome back at the website, escinsight.com. Thank you to my judges, Scott Reid, second time this year. Third time next year.
Indeed, yes. Thank you very much.
Unless we're in Yerevan, in which case they're not going to let you in. Indeed, Scott, we can find you on Twitter as well.
Yeah, Scott Reid at Scott Reid 1980.
Okay, hello. And Connick as well.
Good night from Yerevan.
Well, to be fair, that could be any one of the judges announcing out the scores. But yes, I would love to go back to Yerevan Reserve for Junior Eurovision. And yeah. Connick, take us to the end.
Guitars.
This episode of Jukebox Jury was hosted by Ewan Spence with Scott Reed and Connick McLeod. More Eurovision at ESTinsight.com.